Most of us are familiar with the fact that David was described in the first time that we are introduced to him, or very early when we are introduced to him, as a man after God's own heart. Do we know what that means? What does it mean to be a person after God's own heart? And how is it that that description fits David and fits David perfectly? When we also know and understand that David was not a sinless person. He committed sins and did things wrong, contrary to God's will, just like Saul did. But David, instead of Saul, is described as that man who has the heart like God's, or a heart like unto God. And that's what I wanted us to look at this morning. There's an old book. I'll say an old book, but it's been around for some time. It was written by a psychologist. And the title of his book, or at least a predominant part of the book, was Easy Believism. And he wrote the book in connection with individuals who think that if I believe that Jesus is the Son of God, then that's all that's necessary. That's all I need to do. It's just believe that Jesus is the Son of God and that he died on the cross for me. And by me believing that, then all of my sins are forgiven. And he took that idea and wrote the book on easy believism. Recently, I received another book that describes the same thing and deals with the same problem that our world is constantly bombarded with. And that is that the idea of saying that I believe in Jesus and I believe in his sacrifice that takes away my sin means that I can do whatever I want to do and live like I want to live, and God is pleased with me. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted us to take a look at an old familiar story and take a look at this story to see the comparison that's made and take a look at what it means to have a heart like God wants us to have and to have a heart like David. It does not mean perfection. It does not mean never doing anything wrong, but it does mean allegiance to Jesus Christ. And that's the key, allegiance to God and allegiance to Jesus Christ, which is at the very heart of believing in him. So I want us to start by going to take a look at what's described in connection with David. But before we do that, I want to go a little back, a little further back, and we want to be introduced to the Amalekites. Because of something that Saul is instructed to do with regard to these Amalekites. The Amalekites were the individuals that attacked Israel when they left Mount Sinai. They came out of Egyptian captivity. They stayed in Mount Sinai about a year, received the law, received the instructions to build the tabernacle, started that construction, built that tabernacle, and then moved on from Mount Sinai about a year after being there. When they left Mount Sinai, they were attacked by the Amalekites. And God gave two instructions. He gave them to Moses and to the children of Israel when this attack occurred. And the Bible will tell us this in Exodus chapter 17. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Write this on a scroll as something to be remembered. And make sure that Joshua hears it." Joshua would be the next ruler. What God is talking about here isn't going to take place in the life of Moses. And he wants to make sure that the wording that is used is carried on through Joshua and on to the children of Israel. And what God says is, make sure that Joshua hears this, because I will completely blot out the name of Amalek from under heaven. The story we're going to read takes place over 400 years after these words are written. And the story we're going to read is what Saul is commanded by God to do in connection with the Amalekites. And sometimes we have a hard time with that because we don't realize the amount of patience and time that intervene between God's promise of doing something to the Amalekites and then God actually doing it. And then in the book of Deuteronomy, 40 years after the first words were written, Moses is instructed by God to write this. Remember what the Amalekites did to you along the way when you came out of Egypt. When you were weary and worn out, they met you on your journey and attacked all who were lagging behind. They had no fear of God. So we're given a little more description about the Amalekites and what they did. They didn't face the children of Israel head on. They killed the stragglers. They waited in ambush to kill those that lagged behind. And so God goes on through Moses and says, when the Lord your God gives you rest from all the enemies around you in the land he's giving you to possess as an inheritance, you shall blot out the name of Amalek from under heaven. Do not forget. And those are the instructions that God gave to Moses as they came out of the land of Egypt and reminded him of them as they were about to enter into that promised land where the Amaleks were. So we come to the story with connection with David and connection with Saul. And there are two stories that go together that we want to look at in order to get a picture of Saul and to help us get a better picture of David himself. The first is the battle that Saul has with the Philistines. The reason this battle takes place is because Jonathan, Saul's son, attacked one of the Philistine strongholds. And when he did, the Philistines came against the nation of Israel in order to completely wipe them out. Saul has an army of 3,000 men. The Philistines come with thousands of chariots and with soldiers so numerous they are like the sands of the seashore. And that is what faces Saul. When this occurs, in 1 Samuel chapter 13, we read about the fact that Saul's army of 3,000 begins to flee. They begin to run away until there are only 600 of them left. And Saul is in panic mode. The prophet of God, Samuel, had told Saul, "Wait till I come. I will offer the sacrifices of God, but I will do it, and you wait until I come." Well, Saul waited. He waited until the day that Samuel had indicated he would be coming, and still no Samuel. And because his men, now just the 600 left, are starting to flee from him, Saul takes it upon himself to offer the sacrifices. As soon as he does, Samuel appears. And Samuel specifically tells him, "You have not listened to God. You have not done what God instructed you to do. And because you have not listened to God and did what he instructed, God has chosen for himself a man after his own heart." That's going to be David. This is our first introduction to David. That's going to be the man that's going to take Saul's place. But keep in mind what God says here to Samuel, or rather to Saul. "You have not listened. You have not paid attention." If you look at a couple of verses that are recorded for us in 1 Samuel 13, the Bible will go on to describe that Saul paid no attention to God, even though Samuel tells him, "God commanded you through me to wait, and you did not wait." Those are the instructions that are given. Before we get into Jonathan, I want you to back up a minute with me and just think about Saul and his 600. Do you remember a story in the book of Judges that Saul didn't remember? Do you remember another man who had a pretty good-sized army in the book of Judges and has the same kind of situation that Saul is in, and Saul doesn't remember Gideon? Gideon had an army of 32,000 going against the Midianites. And God came to him and said, "You have too many men. Because with that many men, the men are going to say, 'We won the battle.' And they will not give honor and recognition to God for the battle belonging to God and the victory belonging to God. Therefore, you have too many men. So here's what I want you to do," God said. I want you to tell everybody that's afraid and really doesn't want to fight to go home. 22,000 left, leaving him an army of 10,000. God still comes to Gideon and says, you still have too many. So I want you to take them down to the water, and I want you to watch the way they drink. And whoever drinks the water with his hands and brings his hands up to his face, that's the man that I want you to keep. 300 of them do that. So the 32,000 army has now been reduced to 300. And God then says to Gideon, now you're ready. Now go fight. And they are victorious. Those 300 men of Gideon. Saul doesn't remember that. But in contrast to Saul, we have the story of Jonathan and his armor bearer. Same war, same Philistine army. Same Philistine army that is numbered beyond the sands of the sea and having thousands and thousands of chariots. And instead of 600 men, there are how many? Two. Jonathan by himself with his armor bearer. And Jonathan tells his armor bearer, let's go over to the Philistines. And here's what we'll do. If they see us and they call out to us, wait there, we'll come to you. Then we know that God hasn't delivered them to us and we'll wait for them to come to us. But if they say to us, come up here to us, then we'll know God has delivered them into our hands and we'll go up to them. How many of them are there? Two. And those two kill about 20 men that day within a couple of hours battle. But what really happens is that God quakes the earth. And when the earth begins to shake, all of the Philistine army becomes terrified and begins to flee. And it is them being seen fleeing by Saul and his 600 men that caused them to go after them. And they have a great victory that day over the Philistines. You see the comparison. Saul can't wait. Saul believes that God won't do anything for us if I don't offer the sacrifices. God will do nothing for us unless I do something. And here's Jonathan, who talks to his armor bearer and says, it doesn't matter how many they are, the battle belongs to God. And God can give the victory. It doesn't matter how few there are that are going out to fight. And so let's just you and me, the two of us, go meet that army. And they did. And God, through them, defeated that army. Saul, secondly, was told to destroy the Amalekites. If you've got your Bible, I want you to read with me these verses. In the book of 1 Samuel chapter 15, verses 1 through 3, these are Saul's instructions given to him by Samuel. This is what Samuel tells him. Samuel said to Saul, I am the one the Lord sent to anoint you king over his people Israel. So listen now to the message from the Lord. This is what the Lord Almighty says. I will punish the Amalekites for what they did to Israel when they waylaid them as they came up from Egypt. Now go attack the Amalekites and totally destroy all that belongs to them. Do not spare them, but put to death men and women, children and infants, cattle and sheep, camels and donkeys. God's waited over 400 years to carry out his judgment against this particular nation. And these are his instructions to Saul. Verses 7 through 9 tells us what happened. Verses 7 through 9, the Bible says, then Saul attacked the Amalekites all the way from Havilah to Shur, near the eastern border of Egypt. He took Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive, and all his people he totally destroyed with the sword. But Saul and the army spared Agag and the best of the sheep and cattle, the fat calves and lambs, everything that was good. These they were unwilling to destroy completely, but everything that was despised and weak, they totally destroyed. You see what happened? He did what he wanted to do. He didn't know what God said. He didn't pay attention to God's instructions. He did most of them. He did almost everything God said. But he didn't do exactly what God said. So he didn't have allegiance toward God. And so he comes back. And I want you to watch this next one. When he comes back, Samuel is so upset, God has already told him, Saul's not going to be king anymore. He totally disobeyed me. And Samuel is upset, and when he faces Saul, Saul begins to say, we've been victorious. We did everything God wanted us to do. And then Samuel says, then what is this sound of animals that I'm hearing? Oh, well, we saved some of those, but that's all right. And then Samuel announces to Saul, you're no longer going to be king. You're no longer going to be ruler. God is going to appoint another to be the king over you. Look at Saul's reaction. It's in chapter 15, verse 20 and verse 21. But I did obey the Lord. I went on the mission the Lord assigned me. I completely destroyed the Amalekites and brought back Agag, their king. The soldiers took sheep and cattle from the plunder, the best of what was devoted to God, in order to sacrifice them to the Lord your God. I did do exactly what God said to do. No, he did not. He did not do what God said to do. He took it upon himself to change some things. He took it upon himself to do some things different. He took it upon himself to decide, there are some things God said that I don't have to do. There are some things God said that I don't have to pay any attention to. And I'll do it this way. And surely God will be happy. And surely God will be satisfied. And that's exactly what occurred. I want you to look at this in connection with David. I want you to look at this comparison in connection with David, how he compares to Saul and how much like Jonathan he was. Here's David's heart. It was a heart of faith and courage. Not like Saul's, but a lot like Jonathan's. And it may be the reason why, after having killed Goliath, the Bible will tell us that the heart of Jonathan and the heart of David were knit together, because they both thought the same way and they acted the same way. Jonathan wasn't like his dad. He took his armor bearer and he said, it doesn't matter if there's just two of us. The battle belongs to the Lord, and the Lord will give us victory. So it doesn't matter if there's just two of us. We don't have to have a big army. Let's go meet them. And the armor bearer says, I'm with you every step of the way. Let's go. And then here comes David as he faces Goliath with his brothers there, with all of Saul's army there. And everyone is terrified and refusing to move because of the giant, Goliath. And every time he steps out, they all run in fear, except when David comes. When David comes and he hears the challenge, he says, why isn't somebody going out? This man is a Philistine, and he's challenging the army of God. There is no way this man can win because he's challenging the army of God. And you know the story. Eventually he goes to Saul, refuses the armor, and says, God has given me victory over animals. God will give us the victory over this man. And he goes out and faces him with his slingshot, and he kills him. His faith and his courage, because he trusts God. Doesn't matter how big the army is. Doesn't matter how strong the soldier is. What matters is God's promise and that God will be with us. He had that faith and that courage. He also knew God's discipline. And sometimes he was upset by God's discipline. When Uzzah was killed because the oxen stumbled and he reached up to settle the ark, David became angry. He became angry with God because he thought God was unjustified until what? Do you remember? It's in the book of 1 Chronicles. It's not in 2 Samuel. In 2 Samuel, it is there that David became angry, and it's also there that he had a change of heart about what they needed to do. But it's 1 Chronicles chapter 15 that tells us why he had the change of heart and why he had the change of mind. Because in 1 Chronicles, he went back to the law and read it. He went back to the law and read exactly how God said the ark was to be moved. And it wasn't to be moved the way the Philistines moved it the last time it was moved. It was to be moved according to God's instructions. It was to be moved by the priest carrying it, nobody else, not putting it on a cart, not putting it on a cart driven by oxen. It was to be carried by men, and those men were to be special men. They were to be the priest of God. And that was the only way this ark was to be carried. And David will say in 1 Corinthians 15, the reason why God disciplined us, the reason why God was angry, is because we didn't do it the way he instructed the first time. We weren't paying attention. We weren't giving allegiance to God. We weren't paying any attention to what he said. We weren't even looking up what he said to find out what he wanted. That's why it happened that way the first time. Here's a man after God's own heart. He made a mistake and he found out why. He found out what God actually said. And then he went about things the way God actually said. He knew his sins, even when trying to hide them. We're going to get to a verse that covers these last two in just a second. He lived by God's promise. He believed it. He trusted it. No matter how hard it might seem and how different it was from what everybody else was saying, he lived by what God said, and he followed exactly God's instructions. Read this psalm with me. Psalm 32. I want you to read with me. I've got up verses 1 through 7. We might read just a little bit further, but I want you to look. Psalm 32. This is David's psalm that he writes after his sin with Bathsheba, after his being confronted by God's prophet. And David not only describes the change, he describes what he was going through. And I want you to compare it to Saul. Saul was confronted by his sins and he said, I haven't done anything wrong. There's not a thing wrong with what I did. And Saul becomes upset. Here's David, even before God ever talked to him. Even before God ever sent the prophet to confront him, David was already miserable. David was already going through torment of his own accord, from his own conscience, out of his own mind. And he describes that for us in Psalm 32, where he writes this, "Blessed is the one whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the one whose sin the Lord does not count against them, and whose spirit there is no deceit." We're going to come back to those two verses in just a second, but now drop down to the next one. "When I kept silent," when he was trying to hide it, when he was trying to hide from everybody what it was he had done wrong, "my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long, for day and night your hand was heavy on me. My strength was sapped as in the heat of summer." That's not Saul. Saul came back to face Samuel with no qualms whatsoever about what he had done, with no concern whatsoever that he had not done what God had said to do in the way God said to do it, with no concern whatsoever that God was not going to be unhappy at all, because Saul had done what Saul thought was good. Saul had done what Saul thought was best, but he hadn't done what God said. David had done what he thought was best, and he was torn up inside because of it. David had done what he thought he needed to do to hide it and to cover it up, and he was torn up inside because of it. And so God comes to him, and then he says this, "Then I acknowledge my sin to you, and did not cover up my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin." How much do you think David believed verse 1 and 2? "Blessed is the one whose transgressions are forgiven. Blessed is the one whose sin the Lord does not count against them, and in whose spirit there is no deceit." How strongly do you think David believed that? I think he believed it with all of his heart, because he believed what God said, because he trusted what God said. One of our biggest problems today with assurance is trusting, believing what God says. And sometimes our problem with that assurance is because we know we're not paying attention to what he says. We strive to pay attention, do what he says, and listen to him. And then Paul, or rather David, gives us this admonition. Therefore, let all the faithful pray to you while you may be found. Surely the rising of the mighty waters will not reach them. You are my hiding place. You will protect me from trouble and surround me with the songs of deliverance. In the last part of this psalm, verses 8 through verse 11, is God talking to David. And in bottom line, what God says is, don't be like a mule. Don't be like somebody who doesn't listen. Don't be like somebody who pays no attention to what God says. Listen to God. Put your trust in him. He will forgive. He will forgive us. So it's not an easy form of just saying, oh yeah, I believe in Jesus. It's allegiance. It's allegiance to Jesus. It is listening to him, striving to be like him and follow him. There may be some this morning who are ready to become a Christian. They have your sins washed away by the blood of Christ. There may be some who need to come home to Christ. If you're ready to respond to his invitation, we want to offer it to you as together we stand and as we sing.